someone literally messaged me that exact phrase. I want to see how you got your foot in the door. At the moment where I was racking my brain about how do I get my foot in the door. And I think that's a beautiful like symbol for how no matter what point we are at in our career, there will always be another door and another room that we're trying to get into. And if we don't look around and appreciate the room we're currently in, the people who are currently in it, and the opportunities that come from being in that room, then we're going to miss out on a lot of amazing opportunities. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome back to the Austin Meyer Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I'm your host, Austin Meyer. If you don't know me, I'm a documentary filmmaker and photographer. And on this show, I interview some of the world's best storytellers in all sorts of genres about how they craft the stories they tell. However, this episode is a little bit different. This special edition episode is my 2019 year in reflection episode, in which I distill the lessons I've learned, discuss my goals as a filmmaker, and reflect on some of the experiences that impacted me the most this year. I give a little bit more background on the format of the show in the beginning of the episode, so I think we're just gonna cut this intro short here and jump into it. I hope you enjoy. All right, is there anything else you need? Any prep?
I might get a blanket. Do you mind if I use a blanket?
That's definitely going in the show. All right, shall we?
Let's do it.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Austin Meyer Podcast, episode 32. And this is a special one for me. This is my second annual year in review podcast where I reflect on my past year. And it's a way to kind of distill some of the learnings and experiences that I've gone through in my storytelling year. And also, it's kind of a cool little time capsule of my life. And for today's episode, I've invited my good friend and fellow documentarian, documentary filmmaker, cinematographer, Joe Alexander Short. Joe, what's going on?
Hello, everyone.
And Joe was the one who interviewed me last year on the first annual Reflection Year in Reflection podcast. So, Joe, it's great to have you back here.
It's great to be here. The Austin Meyer home.
The Austin Meyer home, yeah. We are at my house. The family is out of the house at the park, so we have some silence from all the little nieces and nephews running around. And we're settling on the couch here to talk about the year. So let's jump into it.
I think I know last year when we talked, you were kind of transitioning into documentary film, much more so.
Yep.
And now you're firmly in this field.
Mm-hmm.
And last time we talked, you said you're going to New York.
Yes.
Next, right? So talk to me about that move, I guess.
So like potentially moving.
Yeah, I guess why you're going there now.
Oh, yeah, upcoming.
Upcoming, your trip.
Yeah,
and then
so
what you hope out of that trip.
Great. So by the time this podcast comes out, I will be on the East Coast for 1 month. So right now we're speaking on December 27th, and I will arrive in New York on the 29th. And this trip to the East Coast, I'm going to be in New York, I'm going to be in DC, and the main purpose of this trip was to go to an event called the National Geographic Storytelling Summit. And this is an annual event put on at National Geographic where they invite people in their storytelling network, photographers, filmmakers, writers, illustrators. They have scientists, conservationists who use storytelling as a big part of their work. And all these people come together in DC at National Geographic headquarters. And it's a week full of talks and workshops. And over the past year and a half, 2 years, I've started to get involved in that National Geographic Network. So this is the first time I got an invite, which I was really excited about, just as an opportunity to go there and meet a bunch of fellow storytellers, a lot of storytellers who are working on projects related to animals and the environment and climate change, which right now is like striking a chord with me. I'm trying to get into more of that that content that is themed in that direction. So excited to meet those people and kind of feel that energy and feel that creative momentum. And then also I'm looking forward to some of the workshops that we're going to do. One of the workshops that I'm going to be in is around lighting, which we were just talking before the podcast, how I was just on a documentary shoot where I came away feeling like using light better to enhance the visuals in my stories is something that I want to grow in. And so I'm going to be doing a few workshops. So that's the big purpose of the trip. And then around that trip, I'm going to be just spending time with some friends, family, hopefully doing some more podcast interviews out in New York with different storytellers and journalists. And again, I feel like similar to what I said potentially last year, thinking about whether I can envision myself making a like home move to New York sometime in this coming year, 2020. And that feeling is really born out of a desire to be around just more energy, more people my age, more people working in this nonfiction filmmaking industry that I've developed such a love for. And I just love every time I go to New York, the diversity of people in industries and the passion that people seem to have for the things that they're doing. And it's also attractive to me because it scares me a little bit, like to move from beautiful Santa Rosa, where I'm currently living, to New York in the hustle and bustle away from nature, which I'm so comfortable and love, living in a city where I'd actually have to make an income because I'm not living at home. I know I'm very spoiled, but it's real. And so there are parts about it that intimidate me, and that I think is also a pull for me to do something that is a little uncomfortable. So I'll be looking around on this upcoming trip thinking like, could I be here for a little bit? So we'll see.
Yeah, I think last time you went to New York, you were interviewing at these different like production companies. And we're kind of like, is this kind of looking around, getting a sense for things? But your energy around the trip is different this time. And now you're like, I could just go. Like, I don't need anyone to...
Yeah.
I don't need that kind of job. I could just go and make money and be around people.
Yeah, Man, there just does not seem like any sort of direct route in the documentary film world to quote unquote making it. And I've spent a lot of time this year thinking about what making it is. And I think we talked last year on the annual reflection podcast about like long-term goals. And I feel like I even remember talking about winning an Oscar, right? But that was just representative of me aspiring to be the best documentary filmmaker that I can be. Right now, I still resonate with that, but what making it is to me right now is freedom. It's freedom to choose projects that inspire you, financial freedom to be able to do them, to have people who will financially back those projects, to be able to distribute those projects in the way you want. So that kind of freedom to me is making it. And getting to that place, there just does not seem to be any formula to that. So for me right now, it's continuing to just get better at each part of the storytelling craft, which is what this podcast is all about. And I think being more around the industry can allow me to learn faster, but I will always continue to be doing my own projects and trying to find my own voice as a filmmaker as I do that learning from other people or work on other people's projects.
Yeah, and this last year, like, you've had that freedom.
Totally.
Because you've been here, right? And you're like, okay, like, here's, you've pieced together a pretty interesting year. Just, I'm like, okay, one thing to the next. I have the freedom to choose my next project. And
that's been the most, I think there's two things that have been the most special about this time in my life where I'm living at home with my parents in Santa Rosa. The first, and I think the most important, is developing a deep relationship with my parents. Like, that's so special. Like, I cannot say how much I value that. To have time, you know, years after university, to be an adult living with my parents and relating to them in a whole new way than I did, like, back in high school, to learn from them, to share my own life perspective with them, and hopefully be changing some of their habits. Hashtag vegan. Mom, I'm supporting you in your New Year's resolution if you're listening to this. So that's been really special. And then the other thing is exactly that. Because I'm living at home right now, I have more freedom to choose the projects that really fire me up. And in the last 2 or 3 years, like, that's been a big part of what I've been seeking, is freedom to choose projects so that I can discover the stories that excite me the most. And this year, I've done projects on, like, international health and development. I've done projects at ultra marathon races. I've done projects related to the wildfires in our hometown. It's been across the board. And it's been really nice to have that flexibility. So being here has allowed me that. And I think that's been really foundational into my development. But it also seems right now, as December 2019, it seems like my growth as a filmmaker has started to plateau being where I currently am. And I think that if it means doing some projects that I don't actually want to do, that could actually be a point of real growth for me.
I was gonna say, I guess the temptation of that freedom could also be complacency or comfort.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you're like, okay, like, I'm comfortable in this now, but now it's time to grow in these ways.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think that's totally true. Yeah. I try to live my life in a way that when I get comfortable, I intentionally make myself uncomfortable. That's why I love ultra running. It's a sport where every single day
you need to practice that.
Every single day I get to practice making myself uncomfortable. And some of the people who I really look up to as mentors, not only in the storytelling space, but just, like, life mentors. Like, I really love, you know, this, reading books and podcasts from David Goggins. You're reading his book right now,
he's
right?
He's intense. I just ordered it. Yeah, I listened to his podcast, his interview.
So for those who don't know who David Goggins is, he is a extreme human being who is a former Navy SEAL and just, like, the most hardcore athlete human being out there. And he talks about, you know, getting to the top of the ladder. When you get to the top of the ladder, intentionally falling back down. For him, it meant, you know, writing this best-selling book right up there next to Michelle Obama's Becoming when it came out. Or reaching that level of being a Navy SEAL, having everything that he could want in the world, and opting to go be a wildland firefighter where he just digs fire line for miles in super dangerous environments, and, like, getting back to the hard work and daily grind that he appreciates. So I'm not saying that I'm, like, at the top of the ladder by any means, but I resonate with that concept of continually trying to make yourself uncomfortable, because when you're uncomfortable, that's where growth happens.
Yeah. I think for him, it's very much the mental part of working out. Like, people say, oh, have you studied this about physical fitness or this or that? He's like, I don't care about that. I care about the struggle and, like, mm-hmm. what the place that mentally puts me in.
Yeah.
And he's been through so much in his life.
Yeah.
That he needs to be really active about, like, fighting.
Yeah.
Those struggles, those demons. Yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to, like, me potentially moving out, or, like, having to do projects I don't want to do, or having to make money to, like, pay rent in an expensive city like San Francisco or New York, like, I think my mindset this year, as opposed to last year, is like embracing that struggle a little bit more so. And I'm realizing that, hey, say I go to New York and I can't rely on like this short documentary about like a poetry program in Zaatari refugee camp to make me money to pay rent. I might have to do like freelance portrait photography or like engagement photography. Well, like, hey, like if I reframe my mindset around that, like I could learn a lot. I could meet a lot of amazing people. And so I'm like wrapping my mind around that and trying to get excited about doing projects that I might not have chosen to do otherwise and seeing what I can learn from them.
You mentioned something else. I think we went to that soccer game, Stanford Cal soccer game.
Oh yeah.
And talking about the pod that we recorded this time last year and how it is cool to have a capsule, right, of what you were thinking at the time. And you said you get on these, is it monthly phone calls with some of your friends in New York?
Yeah.
And you guys talk about, you have prompts or somebody facilitates it.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about like the one you said you requested. You brought up this analogy of like getting into the door of the documentary industry.
Yeah.
That was like an interesting.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. So what Joe's referring to is two of my closest friends, Hunter and Jason, shout out, who I will probably be with the moment that this podcast is released over on the East Coast. We have something which is called the monthly call. And what we do is we carve out anywhere from 1 to 4 hours each month where all three of us, who are usually in different places around the world, get on a video conference call. And we just use that time to be super intentional with each other about personal growth, life updates. And each call has a facilitator who, before the call, sends prompts for each person to think about. And those could be anything from personal goals, personal values, insecurities that you're working on, to career ambitions, questions you want to ask the group, anything like that. And there was a call earlier this year where I just needed some help from those guys to process where I was currently at in my career journey. And one of the questions that we talked a lot about on that call was this concept of getting in the door. So I have had for this last year and a half, 2 years, since transitioning more from the journalism world to the documentary world, this idea that if only I can just get in the door, like, then everything will just happen for me. And on this call, we started to break down, what is the door? What is this room that you're trying to get into? Is it just a figment of your imagination, or is it a real thing? And for me, I always thought that the room I was trying to get into was the room of people who have the freedom I talked about just a minute ago to make the projects that they really want to do, or the people who are making documentaries at the highest level. That's what I thought of as the room. But then I would take a step back and get a little perspective when I would get a message on social media for someone who saw that I got like a National Geographic grant, and they would send me a message saying, Austin, hey, I'd love to jump on a phone call anytime you can and just like see how you got your foot in the door. Someone literally messaged me that exact phrase. I want to see how you got your foot in the door.
Hmm.
At the moment where I was racking my brain about how do I get my foot in the door? And I think that's a beautiful like symbol for how no matter what point we are at in our career, there will always be another door and another room that we're trying to get into. And if we don't look around and appreciate the room we're currently in, the people who are currently in it, and the opportunities that come from being in that room, then we're going to miss out on a lot of amazing opportunities. And that is definitely what came out of the call I had with Hunter and Jason when we were talking about the room. was it made me step back and figure and think, wow, I do have a lot of opportunities. I do know a lot of amazing storytellers and editors and filmmakers. I don't always have to be looking to what's that next room beyond that next door. That if I'm present in the room I'm currently in, I can trust that eventually I'll be in that next room. And I may not have even noticed that I walked through the door. Right. I will just meander through it with some other people I'm on the journey with. So tactically, or very specifically, what that means for me is just continuing to not wait for permission to create. So not waiting for someone to tell me, okay, you're good enough to make this feature documentary or this short documentary. You know, I saw your resume and it's impressive. Come be my camera assistant or apprentice or learn from me. No, it's like doing what I've been doing the last few weeks, which is like going on Facebook groups and hitting up cinematographers who are local and being like, hey, can I come shadow you for a day? Or it's continuing to just do the pieces that inspire me and not worry so much about what room I'm in.
I heard you say maybe I'm already in the room and it's just a bunch of people grouped together in this room. Not about getting in the room. It's about just kind of getting in my huddle.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah. Getting in your huddle. And the thing that I really like about storytelling, and I think it extends beyond documentary filmmaking, it can be in a lot of different disciplines, is that often that those groups or those teams that you really create something special with, they're kind of small. Like, you don't have to have that many people in your corner to make something special. And I just worked on this documentary shoot down in Chico. It was a team of four of us out there, a field producer. I was the DP or director of photography or cinematographer, lots of different names. There was a DIT or camera assistant, and then a sound person. And it's like the team that's making the whole film is bigger than that. But man, like four people, I was like, wow, I can do so much, like such a better job with four people than when I'm just out there alone, like running and gunning. Like, so I feel like I probably said this last year as well, and probably haven't done a fantastic job of it this year, but it's like continuing to find those people who can like make up my small team, the people who are storytellers, who have the same kind of passion that I do, who have the same type of values that I do, who are interested in the similar types of stories that I do, and want to just team up and just and like make stuff together. Still seeking that out. So if there's people out there listening, come join my team. Let me be a part of your team.
So speaking of similar values, community, you came from that. Tell me about being in China. I haven't really talked about this. I saw your Instagram stories. You're like, this is an amazing experience. So grateful for this. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So for the listeners, a little backstory on this. From the end of October to the end of November, so for 1 month, I was traveling in China. And I was going out to China for an event called the Unleash Innovation Lab. And the Unleash Innovation Lab is this big event, which was in its third year this year. And the event invites 1,000 people aged 20 to 35 from all over the world who work in fields related to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. The UN has Sustainable Development Goals. I believe there's 17 of them, and they're markers of development for the globe in things like climate action, gender equality, sustainable cities, clean energy, clean water, good health and well-being, a bunch of things like that. And so this event brought together 1,000 people from what was over 160 countries who are working on trying to make progress in these fields. And as part of that, they launched a storytelling program where they invited 20 storytellers, most of whom had a foot in the documentary film or photography world, and who tell stories related to international development to come together and work on story ideas, to think about how we can be making more impact with the documentary work we're doing. And it was an amazing 8 or 9 days at this event, like really, really special. And a couple big takeaways for me what made it so special. First of all, in terms of the storytelling program that I was in, I don't believe that I came away with a ton of great information that was directly related to the pedagogy or curriculum that we went through. However, you just can't underestimate the power of working with others from different parts of the world, from completely different backgrounds than you. I mean, the team I was working on there was someone named Preeta Chakrabarty from India, who's an amazing filmmaker, both nonfiction and fiction. Bilal Salau, who lives in Nigeria, filmmaker as well. And then Katie, I believe her last name is Sponseller.
She's going to listen to this.
I know, sorry,
upset.
Katie. who works in Los Angeles. She does documentary filmmaking, also works in TV. And just the diversity of the group and the different backgrounds, like it just was, we were just firing on all cylinders as a team in terms of coming up with ideas. And there was really something to be said about developing. So what we did is we kind of used the design thinking process to, by the end of the week, come up with a story idea, which we then pitched almost like Shark Tank style. Like at the end of the week, we got up and had a 3-minute pitch to a panel of judges about like this vision of a film that we have and try to seek funding for it. And I think a lot of the projects that I do on my own, I still come at it from this improviser's perspective where like I don't really plan much. I kind of just have an idea of something that could be really fun or really impactful or really interesting, and I just like jump right into it. And going through this design thinking process about designing the story and coming up with a pitch, it was a good exercise for me because it made me be more methodical about planning a story and thinking about, before I even start production on it, what's the end goal? What's like the final impact? Where do I want this to live? Who do I want my audience to be? What do I want the exact message to be? And that was uncomfortable to start thinking about that before I even started any production. But it was a good exercise because my natural inclination is to jump into things and figure it out as I go. But the more I work in different settings with different people on different projects, I'm starting to realize that I need to balance this desire for spontaneity and serendipity with planning and careful consideration. And if I can find the right balance of those two things, I think that I'll be able to create more meaningful stories.
I remember your mom saying that about your Zambia trip.
Yeah.
I was like, what's a pod you had recently that you really enjoyed? And you talked about two people who you interviewed. One, yeah, it was like you said, very thoughtful and considered in the pre-production process. The other who was, yeah, I'm going to learn as I go. And there's some magic in that too.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I that's going to be a continual balance that I'll have to strike because I do think that my comfort with jumping into the unknown and figuring things out as I go is why I'm drawn to documentary and nonfiction, where so much of it is spontaneous. And I think that when I'm doing that type of work, when I'm in those scenarios, you do really come across the best version of Austin. However, I'm also realizing that having more of a sense of a plan, and just like setting things up a little more and knowing what's going to happen before it happens also has a really important place to play in this craft.
Maybe the more you work in teams too.
Yeah, for sure. Which are all things that I'm excited to learn more about. I will add one more little note about this China trip that was big for me. was I mentioned how I was interested in getting to some more environmental and climate related storytelling. And that's one of the reasons it's been meaningful to work on some related to the wildfires here in Sonoma County recently, because I see their direct link to climate change. So that feels meaningful. But I was on the plane ride over to China, and I had just finished on that plane ride reading a book called We Are the Weather, which was one of my top nonfiction book choices for the year by an author named Jonathan Safran Foer, which just came out recently. And it's about climate change. It's about its link to animal agriculture, and it's about the individual's role to make a difference in turning the tide of this disaster our planet is headed towards. And I came away from that book feeling like, wow, I need to be doing more. Like, yes, I'm vegan and I'm proud to be so. Yes, I care about the environment and give to environmental causes, but like, I want to be doing more. I want to be using more of my skill set to make a difference, because I believe that this is real, what we're headed towards. And so then I began to brainstorm, like, how can I use one of my deepest skill sets, which is as a storyteller, to make an impact in that space? And that's what I've been reflecting on in my December newsletter, which is about to come out. But one of the big takeaways of being in China was, in the face of so many drastic challenges that can so often seem helpless, things like climate change, things like inequality, like all these problems that are so big and impact so many people that can be easy to just tune out. Suddenly I was in China at this event with 1,000 people who all had that light in their eye of like, I can change the world, I can make a difference. And people who were actually in the fight, were actually starting organizations, who were working for organizations like the UN or activism organizations, and just like making real differences out there. And to be amongst that energy of optimism, that was contagious. And it has fueled my fire to continue pursuing these stories that are about these challenging topics, which don't have a lot of funding behind them, to like keep trying. Like I came away and I came away with a story idea that I want to do related to climate change in Panama, with someone who I traveled with in China, who is from an indigenous community in Panama. And like, I'm realizing more so than last year we did this podcast, that it is freaking hard to get these projects funded and to find a place to like publish these things, like short documentary that are not tied to a news peg. That is hard. But I came away from China being like, I gotta keep going. I gotta keep trying.
Yeah. Being around, not only like facing the reality of climate change, but in like a hopeful way, like allows you to do that when you're around.
Yeah.
That kind of community.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, you couldn't be amongst that group of people and not come away feeling optimistic.
Yeah. What's the story in Panama, briefly?
I can't share the full story idea. However, I can explain a little bit of what I'm trying to do with the story. And this will be good to talk about, because I'm processing these thoughts as I write them down for this December newsletter, which will be coming out soon. So I think that climate change is a very challenging story to tell. I think climate change is a boring story in its natural state. And one of the reasons I think that climate change is boring is because our minds, as people who consume stories, are not programmed to empathize with things that are very abstract and very large scale. A quick example of that. When I was traveling in 2015, reporting with Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times, he was telling me a story about, he was reporting on a genocide in Darfur. And at that same time that he was trying to get an American or global audience to care about these hundreds of thousands of people who are dying. He didn't feel like he could make any indent. He didn't feel like he could make people care. At the same time that he was doing that reporting in Darfur, there was an article that was coming out in the Times about this. I believe it was an eagle or some sort of bird that was being removed from its like perch on this New York City building where it had like made its home. This bird was being like kicked out from its home, and like the whole city was up in arms about this bird being kicked out. And he was like, how can I get people to care as much about these hundreds of thousands of humans that are dying in a genocide? How can I get them to care as much about that as they do about this bird, this one bird being kicked out?
Mm-hmm.
And that led him down the path of kind of studying the psychology of empathy. And what he found and what is reflected in his reporting now is that this empathic muscle that we have starts to turn off when the subject we are writing or telling a story about goes from one person to two people. That's why so many of his books and his columns are centered around, here's an individual, and here is how this individual is representative or tells a larger story about a big population. That's kind of the formula of a lot of his stories.
Mm-hmm.
So for climate change, now we're talking about a story that impacts the entire world. So it's like already, it's like, wait, what? How do you wrap your mind around that? So the scale and complexity is so big that it's hard for people to wrap their minds around, and so they tune out. And it's also not just the scale and complexity, but it also tends to be abstract. So when there are stories about climate change, often what is talked about being lost are things like culture, traditions, which is real, but it's not super tangible. So what I'm trying to do with this story in Panama, and I know it's a little tricky here because I can't describe the exact story based on the development of that I'm in right now. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to take what I've learned about why climate change is such a challenging story and kind of flip it and see how specific I can tell a story about climate change, see how tangible I can make it. I don't want it to be about culture and traditions. I want it to be about really specific human things that will be lost. Yeah.
In the lives of one person, have you found that person?
Well, it's actually not about one person.
How many people? How dispersed is my empathy going to be?
Okay. Okay. You know what? Let me say the brief concept here. Because I don't think I have a big enough listenership that someone's going to go do it. And if someone does go do it, hats off to you.
They can be a community.
Exactly. They can bring it in. Yeah. So in this book, We Are the Weather, I read this passage that had me on the verge of tears at the end of the book. And this passage, he was talking about what will happen, like what's at stake if humans go extinct, whether that's from climate change or whether that's from the next climate event, you know, someday in the future. Like what will be lost? And Jonathan Safran Foer, the author of this book, wrote this like 2-page list of these things that would be lost. And the things he wrote that would be lost were things like, he said like, there will be no more trick-or-treating with pillowcases. There will be no more setting clocks 5 minutes fast so that you're not late for appointments.
He's saying if we go extinct? That's what he's saying.
Yeah, he's kind of like painting this future world where like humans don't exist anymore.
Okay.
And the things he said would be lost were like these super granular experiences of being human that are pretty universal, but they're like these, just like they're so tiny. It's not like this big, it's not culture, it's tradition. They're the smallest units, the atomic units that make up culture and tradition. And poetic. Oh my God, man, this passage. Let me actually just read a little bit from this passage. I think I gave a little example, but his language is so perfect that I just want to give a little taste of what I'm talking about. So I'm about to read from, again, this is the book We Are the Weather by Jonathan Safran Foer. He says, "Even if humans survive global warming, the next proverbial flood will almost certainly end our short reign on this planet. It could be a lethal virus, a drought, an ice age, a volcanic eruption. Perhaps resource scarcity will spark a final war. At some point, if not on our first try, we will get death right. And then our planet will orbit unintelligently for the rest of time, an unintelligent rock among unintelligent rocks in an unintelligent universe. The brief experiment with human consciousness, with learning words, planting seeds, sizing the space between monkey bars, twisting loose teeth, trick-or-treating with pillowcases, sliding pentels under casts, making stovepipe hats and beards from construction paper, folding cranes, planting flags, folding poker hands, sharing selfies, wrestling down jealousy, raising pylons to bring electricity to remote communities, raising pylons for beautiful bridges, rowing sailboats in the doldrums, lowering flags to half-mast, struggling to refold maps, sizing engagement rings, launching telescopes to see ever farther into the past, cutting umbilical cords, testing the heat of milk against wrists, reshingling roofs, making way for ambulances, racing hurricanes, preparing wills, misremembering childhood homes, choosing cancer treatments, crumpling inadequate eulogies, setting clocks a few minutes fast to fool oneself, turning off lights to save electricity or a free way of life will be forever unremembered." So that's just a little taste of this kind of passage, which continues to go on. But the takeaway for me is, like, I was so impacted reading that, which comes towards the end of the book. It just made what we stand to lose so personal and so tangible. The line that he writes right before that section, which I have like starred a ton of times in the margins of the pages, is, "Life is not always indispensable in the abstract, but it is always indispensable in the particular." And I just think that's like, that's gold. That is pure gold right there. And so the story I want to do in Panama is on an island that is predicted to be underwater by 2038 due to climate change. And I want to do a similar thing that Jonathan Safran Foer did right there, but do it visually and showcase the particular of what stands to be lost on this island when that happens. I guess that's as specific I'll get.
Yeah. And you know someone who's from that island.
Yeah. So at the event in China, I met an individual named Duigdi Valiente, who I ended up traveling with for multiple weeks after the event. And we spent a lot of time talking about the story idea and also his community. And I spent a lot of time being humbled and apologetic about how the U.S. has messed up a lot of the world.
good approach.
Yes.
Sounds like that's somewhere you should, like, go and do some research. Maybe, right? Like, who your characters might be.
Exactly.
That's how you want to approach it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I have my access point through him, which you got to have. More and more, I'm understanding that access is everything in documentary. So he's a good start. And I think I'm really excited to make this project happen. And I don't know yet how it's going to happen or where it will live, but it's going to happen.
Access and passion.
You got the passion. Exactly.
You should see Honeyland.
Oh, yes. Okay, so. Honeyland is a documentary that's out this year, folks, and it's getting a lot of rave reviews, including from Joe.
Yeah. Very particular story that ends up becoming like a parable. It takes place in Macedonia. Mm. The filmmakers like wanted to make a film in this rural, very rural area of Macedonia, and then stumbled upon this woman, found kind of the right angle for the story, and it's beautiful.
Nice.
Just think about like the tone of this conversation compared to last year. And so like, I wonder what, like what success looks like to you now, working on something like, seems like your passion is really falling in terms of telling stories related to climate change.
I wouldn't say, like, I'm still open to any type of stories. I'm in no way do I feel like I've found a niche within documentary filmmaking. And I know that does help some people to be like the person who makes films related to like adventure sports, the person who makes films related to like animal agriculture, whatever it is. People do have their niches, and I see some of the value in that, because then you develop a certain relationship with funders who are in that space, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's useful quite yet for me to go specific, because I'm still in that kind of flare, open up, say yes to every opportunity space. And the thing that excites me most is the craft of storytelling. And if there's a good story, it doesn't really matter the theme. The things that I get the most excited about watching and making and wanting to make is a story related to complex human emotions. And that's why, for me, the best documentary I saw this year was one that came out, I believe, in 2018 called Eveline. Mm. And I watched that, and I see a film that's getting a lot of praise this year called American Factory. Those are two very different films, both good, but American Factory is like, oh, this is an interest, you know, this is an interesting film that shows, you know, how globalization and automation is changing industries. Whereas the movie Eveline is about this family going on a backpacking trip, trying to process the suicide of one of their family members. And it's just like the things that are moving to me right now in a storytelling sense are just digging deep into very complex human emotions. And that's why I came away from Eveline feeling like, whoa, wow, like so moved. And I came away from American Factory, which is about this factory in, I believe it's the Midwest, where there's like half, it's been bought out by a Chinese investor, and it's about American workers working with Chinese workers. It's like, that was interesting. Yeah, well done. So I guess success to me is continuing to just get better. Success to me is grounding the stories I'm making in impact, trying to impact people personally, either move them. I mean, that's what I go for. That's what I'm always going for. That's what I like to have happen to me when I read or watch or listen to stories. I like to be moved. That's what I want to try to do. But I also want to make impact in terms of like we were just saying on climate issues. Like, I want people to change the way they're living. But I don't have like a success to me right now doesn't mean anything related to like external measures, like an award or getting into a film festival, or that's just out of my control. So yeah, those are the things I'd say. It's like diving into complex emotions, telling stories around those, telling stories that are grounded in impact, whether that's personal or global, and yeah, having fun while doing it. And I feel grateful that I find this stuff really fun.
Yeah, you've like gone out and made random projects like a couple weeks ago, right? You just filmed Golden Hour at wherever you were. So like enjoying like the aesthetic part of it.
Oh yeah, the artistic part of it's big for me. I think that's why I was attracted more to documentary filmmaking. One of the reasons I was attracted more to documentary filmmaking than journalism is the liberty you have for artistic expression, which I've mentioned to some previous journalism professors who would like to argue with me on that, which if they want to come on the podcast and argue with me about that, I'm happy to do so. But yeah, those like little minute long videos that I do for social media and stuff like that, I do those when I arrive in a location and just kind of feel inspired to express how I'm feeling visually. And it's just kind of like, it's almost just like a painting for me, just like a little way to capture the spirit I feel in a space. And it also feels good to make. I like to make, I like to put things out, I like to create. And the nature of a lot of this documentary work is it just takes so long to make things and then to get things put out. I mean, I've been waiting on pieces right now. Like, yeah. I mean, I've been done with this one piece that's coming out with Al Jazeera. I've been done with it for 8 months. Mm-hmm. And it's still not out into the world. And so to be able to have control of just like putting out a video today, now, yeah, it feels good to me.
Have you considered, I've been thinking about this personally too, because documentary, you're going out and finding stories all the time. It's pretty laborious. Have you considered, and you're a really good writer, have you considered kind of fiction or writing your own stuff at all?
Yeah, I have. So I studied creative writing with a focus in fiction at Stanford. Really enjoyed that. I have so much respect for people who write fiction. It is so challenging. I really enjoyed it, but never kind of felt a calling or compelled to pursue it professionally. The newsletter that I started is a way to hold myself accountable to continue writing, because I do really like the craft of writing. So I want to continue doing that. And like I've said numerous times, the craft of storytelling is where I am. And right now I'm trying to, you know, build my career in documentary filmmaking, but I could get so fired up to do like a narrative podcast or to, you know, write a book. Like I could get so fired up to do that kind of stuff, but it seemed important for me to narrow in my storytelling scope into at least one form that I could really hone the craft in.
Right.
And so for me, that meant using the video camera, because I found those types of stories most impactful to me. And I really liked the balance of technical skills and software and editing and cameras, and then the more soft skills that are required to do the job well as well.
Yeah. Right. Well, you're moving into your next chapter.
Yep.
Sounds like.
Yeah.
Potentially could be in New York.
Potentially, who knows?
Potentially.
It's open.
It's open. You're open to...
I haven't decided.
Austin's open.
Yeah, I'm open. Send me your city recommendations, people.
Heard of Wichita.
There you go.
More affordable.
Wherever I am, it is still very important for me to have the flexibility to pursue something that just sparks, like gives me a spark. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I want to be in a place where even if I did move to New York or San Francisco, wherever it is, that if a project came up and I was like, Austin, we need you to move to Mozambique for 3 months, I'm like, done. Here we go. Like, that's just important to me right now. So I want to keep that flexibility.
Okay. So what are you most grateful for from this previous chapter?
This like 2019?
This 2019 chapter. What was like a significant challenge that you overcame?
I think I'm most proud of the day by day progress and grind that was editing the film on maternal health care that I shot in 2018 in Zambia. That project was so much more challenging than anything I'd ever done. And the edit of it really was a struggle for me. And one of the storytelling challenges that was hardest to overcome was showing that film at like my first feedback session, which you were a part of. And I just got crushed. Like, I mean, I came away from that just crying and just like distraught at how the film played out and like went over in the room, and having poured my whole heart into that to feel like it didn't work. And then to show up the next day and try to reshape that thing and get it to a point now where the draft stands at 22 minutes, is currently being pitched to, you know, National Geographic and some broadcast documentary outlets. Get it to a point now where I'm like proud of it. And it's gotten some really great feedback from people who I deeply trust. I'm proud that I bounced back from that really tough feedback session. I'm proud of the days that I spent transcribing hundreds of pages of interviews while my friends were out on the ski slopes and I was in like a Starbucks transcribing interviews because I had a deadline that I told myself I needed to hit. So I'm proud of that journey. That's one I would say.
It's very Goggins.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
The storytelling Goggins.
Storytelling Goggins.
Yeah. So I don't know when that's going to come out or where, but I mean, these things take so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like you have to be open to like any possibility when you're making something. Like making anything is really vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, I had to, for that film, the first draft that you saw was an hour long. So it's gone from an hour to 22 minutes. I removed one whole character from the story who I spent months with developing a deep relationship, like struggled a lot to meet this person and develop a relationship with her. And like cutting that person out of this film was like heartbreaking.
It's tough. Yeah, I don't think how much time in the relationship.
I know. Yeah. So, and every decision like that is heartbreaking, or every day that I am struggling on an edit is moments that I'm like forced to really think about like what is my purpose here. Like when I realized that this hour long film wasn't working, I had to do a lot of deep thinking about am I trying to make a long film just to say like, yeah, I can do that. I can make a long story. I can make an hour long film and just like satisfy this weird part of my ego that wants to be able to say that. Or is my goal to actually spread awareness about the challenges that mothers face around the world and their babies? Because cutting this person out and making this story less than half the length is what the story needs to be the best it can be, to make the most impact it can be. And I actually have to think about distributing this thing. It's a lot easier to distribute something like that. That's 22 minutes or 26 minutes rather than an hour. So every day I was having to confront those editing decisions. I also had to confront my own ego and my own goals with the story I was making.
Dang, that sounds like not some real,
yeah, man,
growth. And that's,
you're gonna go through it soon.
I know. I'm worried. I'm scared. I was saying thing. I have all these interviews to transcribe, and
Joe's working on a project from the Philippines right now, which I'm super excited to follow his editing process on. But yeah, man.
Yeah, already coming up against some barriers of, you know. You have to put in the time.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going to make mistakes the first way through. And it might lead you down a path that's a lot of work that you then have to retrace.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to... I think that's what's the difficult thing about documentary, right? It's like the rewrite is laborious to get to the point where you can rewrite and see it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I expect like more times you do that, the less mistakes you're going to make the first time.
Totally. And it's the same for filmmaking. It's the same for if you're an artist or a musician or a writer. It's like, you know, you're going to make a ton of mistakes. Just accept that now, because that is part of the learning process. You don't know what to look out for until you do it.
Yeah.
Right. And so we're at that beautiful point in our career journeys where we have to accept that we're going to make a lot of these beginning mistakes.
Yeah. And you said you were going to interview Bing Liu.
Yeah.
Right? And he was
he's still on the docket.
But he said, you know, I started a new project and I'm finding that all the lessons I learned from Minding the Gap
Right. So yeah, this is Bing Liu for the listeners out there is a Academy Award nominated documentary filmmaker from last year who made my favorite documentary that I've ever seen called Minding the Gap. Been trying to get him on the podcast. Hopefully 2020 is the year where he will be coming on. And when I invited him earlier on in 2019 to come on and talk about the craft of storytelling, he wrote me back saying that so many of the lessons that he thought were crystallized from making Minding the Gap, he's now re-questioning, that he was really struggling with the story he was working on. And I just got so much respect for him when he said that, you know, because every story is going to pose new challenges. It's going to make you rethink everything you thought you knew.
Yeah, which is part of the exciting part of it. Kind of have to embrace that. I feel like that's kind of talking about, you know, making mistakes early on.
Mm-hmm.
Is a question that someone posed to you on Instagram?
Yes. So yesterday I put out a call on my Austin Meyer Films Instagram account for some questions that people may have for me as we wrap up 2019. And speaking about those beginning mistakes, we actually had a question come in from Rasha Aridi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Thank you for your question, Rasha. Rasha asked, are there any common mistakes you see up-and-coming storytellers make? Any advice? Thank you for your question, Rasha. It's always funny when I get questions like this because it's kind of like getting the note someone asked me about how do I get in the door, where I was like, oh, wait, I'm in the door? And like when I get a question like this about common mistakes I see up-and-coming storytellers make, it's like, wait, I feel like I'm an up-and-coming storyteller. What mistakes am I making? So Rasha, for the thing that comes to mind first is that I think up-and-coming storytellers are too worried about perfection and too worried about getting everything perfect and right and brilliant and artistic, and that people put so much pressure on themselves to reach those standards, to produce something that is at the level of their taste, that it cripples them, that they do not produce, that they do not create stories, because striving for perfection is an unattainable goal. And so I've seen this from studying creative writing at Stanford. I've seen it in the journalism world. I've seen it in the filmmaking world. And so I would say my best advice is to not get hung up on perfection and to constantly create and put things out and not worry too much about your subjective point of view on what is good. Make the mistakes that Joe and I are just talking about, that Bing Liu talked about. Make those mistakes early and often. And you can only do that by just constantly creating. So not getting hung up on perfection. That would be my answer.
I'll add to that.
Yeah, please.
I think as you're creating, then reflecting on what you made so you can, you know, improve the next round, asking that question of like, how can I be more true to this story? And how can I get like closer and closer to that truth?
That's great. And let me yes and that one more time. Let me yes and that one more time, which is one of the most common pieces of advice that guests of this show have given when I ask the final question, which is what advice do you have to become a better storyteller, Rasha, is guests have said to look at the stories that you love the most and break them down, break them apart, see how they're put together, see how they work. And I think that's what Joe's getting to right there. It's like the things that you make, like reflect back on them. What's working? What didn't work? And then if you're continually putting things out, you're continually learning from your own process. But I think it all stems from giving yourself grace to make mistakes and produce things that aren't amazing. Because then you're constantly learning as you go. The next question that we had come in was from Sarah Zurikat. Sarah asks, when are you going to Africa? Sarah, that is a fantastic question. I would love to get back to Africa, which is where I was for a lot of 2018. I was in Zambia and Tanzania, Botswana. Would love to get back there. And I'm currently talking to one or two different organizations that do great philanthropic work in Africa, and hoping that I can tell some of the stories of the work that they were doing to get back there. I would love that. But I have no definitive plans in the future. And Sarah, who I met in Jordan, I hope to come back to Jordan this year for the third year in a row. And if I do, I will see you there. Thank you for your question, Sarah. One final question we'll pull from the Instagram call out. This question comes from Paige Smith. What's up, Paige? I know you're.
Paige.
What's up, Paige? She's a runner. I know that. And I also know that she's in journalism school down in Southern California, I believe at USC. So, Paige, I hope school is going well. Her question was, with hindsight, is there anything you would have done differently?
At what point in your life?
I'm not sure if you mean just in 2019 or just anything.
Of course, yeah.
Or anything. Yeah, you know what? There's nothing that pops to mind super quickly. I'm in a very good place, to be honest, about where I am right now and who I am. And I'm hesitant to say that I would have done something differently because I know all the things that I've done, whether good or bad experiences, are what shaped me into who I am today. And I'm really happy with who I am today. So there's nothing that comes to mind. And the other thing that pops into my head, Paige, is that in 2018, in our last podcast we did this, Joe, I talked a lot about transitioning into documentary world, quitting that job at SAP, where I was working at this tech company for a little bit, and how I was working at this tech company and just had no passion for what I was doing and just didn't believe in it. And every day I was there and not going after what my passion was, like, was weighing on me so heavily. And so when I read your question, Paige, I thought, like, is that what I would have done differently? Would I have, like, just not taken that job? Would I have quit that job earlier? But I don't think I would. And it's because, like I said, that having that job for that amount of time has made me who I am today. And specifically, having a job that I showed up to and I wasn't passionate about every single day, like, do you know how much that makes me love what I do right now? Like, every day I get to do this. Every day I get to make stories. Like, I appreciate it so much more because of the experience I had working a job that I wasn't passionate about. So there are a lot of elements like that where it's like, even the experiences that I reflect on that weren't, you know, super fun or amazing or like a growth, you know, those still shape me into who I am today. So I wouldn't do them differently.
Is that all the listener questions? What about the bots? Didn't the bots?
Oh, yeah. We did have some bot questions. We did have a couple Instagram bots, which apparently jump into your Instagram story polls. I had no idea about this. We had one question come in from a bot that was just a emoji of a star. Thank you for that.
Your star.
I'll take that as a compliment. We also had a Instagram bot ask me, what is my favorite portrait photo? And that bot is a portrait photography account.
What's your favorite portrait photo?
What's my favorite portrait photo?
How about of yours? One that you took?
One that I took.
What did it mean to you?
Well, my favorite portrait photo that I've taken is of the person who I talked about earlier having to have cut out of the documentary, whose name is Annie Mchemwa. When I was with her in Zambia, filming her for the documentary on maternal health, she was 19, just had her first baby. And my favorite portrait I've ever taken is her holding her baby, sitting on the floor of her home. And it's my favorite photo because at the time that I took that photo, I had already been with her and like building a relationship with her for months and really knew her to a certain extent. Obviously, I don't know her super well, but you know, I'd spent a lot of time with her, and I feel like that photo, it's not just like a pretty photo. It captures who she is as a person and like the beauty and grace she has. And at the same time captures a moment and tells a story of a moment because it was the first day of her baby's life and she's holding that baby. So I think that's a cool element of portrait photography. If you can capture who a person is, like at their level, like their soul, their essence, and at the same time of that, capture a moment and tell the story of what's happening in that moment. So that would be my favorite photo. Thank you to the Instagram bot for that beautiful question.
And you took the moment, like you took the time to get to know her, to know that that moment was significant.
Right.
And,
right. Yeah.
All right. Well, what are some final questions so we can wrap this up? Do you have any goals, concrete goals for 2020 looking ahead?
That's a great way to, wrap up the show. 2020 goals. My goals are to surround myself with more people who are working in the space that I am, who are passionate, who are kind-hearted and have the similar values that I do. My goal is to develop each and every day as a storyteller. My goal is to put out more documentary films than I did this year. This year felt like, I felt just slow this year. Like I was just waiting on people, you know, like there's so many things I pitched that's just like, I never hear back, or even if they get taken, like I said, been waiting for like 8 months for this piece to put out. So I just need to figure out a better way of doing this where like, I just have more things coming out. So that's a goal, to put out more. And just, come on, just keep doing what I'm doing. Just keep on it.
The groove.
Yeah. Feel the groove.
Yeah.
Feel the groove.
Yeah. Well, we collaborate a little bit on that, the piece, Santa Rosa Fires. We still have to finish that.
Yeah. And that'll be coming out we have two pieces we're going to be co-collaborators on. The Business Insider one, too.
Oh, that's
coming
up. That's true.
Yeah.
Let's keep that going.
Yeah. So we'll keep that going. I don't have anything profound to end on with like 2020 looking forward, but it's just like keep on the roll, you know? It's like keep moving forward, surrounding myself with good people and trying to get better and having fun.
All right.
Shall we wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up.
Joe, thank you so much for coming by today to do the second annual Time Capsule Year in Review. This means a lot to me to have you here, man. Really appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
Thank you to all the listeners. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. And I hope you are kicking off 2020 in style. And let's have an amazing year. Not on the podcast. Let's just have an amazing year. All right. Love you all. See you later. That's it for episode 32 of the Austin Meyer podcast. Thank you so much to Joe Alexander Short for coming over to interview me and being so thoughtful and considerate with the questions he was asking. And thank you to all of you who are listening to the podcast. I know there are a million others that you could be listening to, and I do not take the fact that you are here for granted. So thank you. I hope you are having a lovely holiday period and new year. And as we head into that new year, 2020, a new decade, my sign-off message remains the same. Go out and tell some stories.